The fear factor is back.
What's scaring the markets today?
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. Today is Thursday, August 18th.
Coming up, we'll get the latest on the market mayhem that has returned after a brief hiatus.
The Pope speaks out on the economy.
Get ready for a new fee to do something that you currently do for free.
And the TSA has a new strategy for finding sketchy passengers. Being nice.
Oh, what a good idea. Yeah. Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
We'll start with our continuing coverage, Breakdown, Our Economy One Step at a Time. It's another day of market mayhem. Diane Swonk is chief economist with Mesirow Financial, and she's with us from Chicago, as she is every Thursday. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Diane, tell us what's going on in the markets this morning. We're down 347 points on the Dow.
Yeah, we're seeing basically the fears about Europeans' debt situation and European banking stability in particular reach our shores. Not only is there concern about how European banks can handle their own sovereign debt situation and the write-offs that are associated with that, but how stable are they here in the U.S.? Those banks that are in Europe do have U.S. branches, and the New York Fed is now looking into the stability of those banks and their ability to continue lending not only to foreign subsidiaries here in the U.S., but to U.S. Lenders, U.S. borrowers as well. And that's, you know, reminiscent of, it's a preemptive strike, frankly, by the New York Fed to try to cut off any contagion like we saw in 2008. But let's face it, anything reminiscent of 2008 is just not what the financial markets want to hear right now.
Well, here's something else that's reminiscent of 2008. The yield on the 10-year Treasury bond, this is U.S. government bond, the 10-year yield is at 2.05% right now. What does that tell you about where we are?
Well, certainly you hit the nail on the head earlier, Jeremy, when you said the fear factor is back. People are afraid of what's going on in financial markets, the turbulence that we're seeing in equity markets, and what could happen from European banks. And as a result, they're running to what they see as the safety, the clear safety of the U.S. Treasury market, kind of undermining what S&P did in terms of downgrading. In fact, we've seen that more people have sought the safety of the U.S. credit market, the U.S. Treasury market in particular, since S&P downgraded a few weeks ago.
Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
The markets could be reacting to this, partially at least. The number of people seeking first-time unemployment benefits rose slightly last week by 9,000 claims to more than 400,000. We also got word this morning from the government that the Consumer Price Index, a gauge of consumer inflation, was up 0.5% in July. Michelle Meyer is senior economist at Bank of America Merrill Lynch Global Research, and she's with us from New York to talk about the latest economic data out this morning. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
So the number of people filing for jobless benefits is now above that 400,000 mark, again, at 408,000. Why is that 400,000 threshold so important?
I think it's important because it symbolizes that the labor market is healing very slowly. But typically, when you pass that 400 level, at least in the past 10 years or so, it's suggestive that the unemployment rate can actually increase further.
The four-week average was down, though, and that's supposed to be a bit more reliable. Your assessment, if you will, of what the national unemployment picture looks like at the moment?
It's still elevated. The unemployment rate stands just above 9%, and I think the risk is that it increases further from here. I don't expect to see a big spike further in unemployment, given that we're already at such high levels. But it's worrisome because demand is slowing in the economy, consumers are pulling back, the financial market has been deteriorating. So there's a lot of downside risk to the economy right now, which hurts confidence and restrains hiring.
We also got these inflation numbers, Michelle, that showed we're paying a bit more for goods. Should a possible recession combined with inflation be a concern down the road?
It can ultimately, if it's sustained. But in my view, the higher prices won't be able to persist in an environment where you have such high unemployment because consumers won't accept those higher prices.
They're just not going to buy.
they're not going to buy, or they'll substitute away to other types of goods. And with wages remaining very low, it won't set into sentiment. So you were still very far from a wage price spiral, which is what you would need to get in order to see a stagflationary environment.
Michelle Meyer from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Michelle, thanks.
Thank you.
Today we found out that sales of pre-owned homes fell again in July by about 3.5%. Since the housing bubble burst more than 4 years ago, prices have been falling in many regions of the country, but some markets are weathering the downturn better than others. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
One of the best housing markets in the country is right here in Washington, D.C., and S&P's David Blitzer says you don't have to look hard to find out why.
The U.S. government is a fairly stable employer, doesn't shrink massively during recessions, so it gives the whole area a fair amount of stability compared to other parts of the country.
Like, for example, Detroit, where foreclosures and falling home prices continue to depress the market.
The economic base that had been provided by the auto industry up until 5, 6, 7 years ago is largely gone.
Blitzer says home prices are still falling where the speculative bubble was the biggest, Sunbelt cities like Miami, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. But in the Midwest, which didn't see much of a bubble to begin with, Kansas State University's Tracy Turner says home values haven't fallen as much.
There tends to be less pressure from fundamentals such as income growth, employment growth, population growth than in the coastal cities. And there are fewer geographic restrictions than in the coastal cities.
And when home values fall below what buyers owe, people can't move to where the jobs are, says IHS Global Insight housing economist Patrick Newport.
It's one of the reasons why the downturn has lasted so long. You can't sell your home because you're underwater, and if you're deeply underwater, you're stuck with the job that you have, and you're stuck with the home that you're living in.
Until job seekers are more mobile, he says, unemployment will remain high, keeping home values low. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Well, Jeremy, ATM fees are nothing new, right? I mean, sometimes you get charged when you try to get cash out of somewhere. If you get $200, you're charged like $202.75.
I've often thought that it would be a great business plan to supplement income would be to get an ATM somewhere and make the fee like $4 and just rake it out.
What are you, a banker? What's going on with you? My goodness. Now the banks may start charging you and I for having the debit card in the first place through a monthly fee. This is one bank that's trying this debit card fee of $3 in some markets. And Marketplace's senior business correspondent Bob Moon is with us now in our Los Angeles studio to talk about it. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, Steve.
So who's doing this and why?
Well, now Wells Fargo is going to try this out in a handful of states, Washington, Oregon, New Mexico, Nevada, and Georgia. It's joining Chase, which is also running a $3 a month pilot in Wisconsin, and at least a couple of other regional banks have imposed $4 or $5 fees. I talked this morning to banking industry analyst Bert Ely. He explains they're doing this after the new regulation that reduced how much banks can charge merchants for each debit card transaction.
Banks are trying to make it up someplace else. They need to generate X amount of revenue in order to cover the expenses of providing services to customers.
So it seems consumers still get stuck with the bill. Wells Fargo says it's going to closely monitor how the guinea pigs in these five states respond to this new fee before deciding whether to go ahead and roll it out nationwide.
What if I don't want to pay this, Bob? How do I avoid it?
Well, Wells Fargo wants to make it $3 a month, so pony up right now. But it only applies if you use your debit card to make purchases. It won't cost you if you just use the card at ATMs or if you sign up for certain checking accounts. And Bert Ely told me he thinks those kinds of exceptions will be the rule.
What we may find is that the banks will basically say there'll be no charge if you utilize certain other services of the bank, such as direct deposit, maybe you have a credit card, a safety deposit box, things like that.
Isn't this going to make people use debit cards less, Bob?
Well, Ely told me it's too early to say. There will probably be some backlash, but it can cost a lot to use that other kind of plastic, too, in credit card interest charges. Maybe time to break out the old checkbook.
Oh, boy. Marketplace's Bob Moon here in the studio. Bob, thanks.
Thanks.
The New York Times reports today that the Justice Department is investigating whether Standard & Poor's improperly rated mortgage investments leading up to the 2008 financial crisis. Now, Steve, lest you think that's payback for S&P's downgrade of the U.S. credit rating.
Which,
of course, we would never think that.
It is kind of conspicuously timed, though.
The government says the investigation actually started before the downgrade.
There you go. For more business news and the numbers, of course, you can check out our website and check out The Breakdown, Our Economy, One Step at a Time, marketplace.org.
enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Now to the Marketplace Global Perspective. The Pope has been talking economics this morning. He's in Spain for a Catholic youth conference. For more on this, let's bring in a man who follows the Pope's every move. David Willey of the BBC joins us from Rome. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what's the Pope been saying this morning?
Well, on the flight to Madrid, where he's attending this huge festival of Catholic youth from all over the world, he launched into the problems of the economy. He knows, of course, that there are many, many unemployed young people, not only in Spain, but in other parts of the world. And what he did was to denounce the mentality which says you have to make a profit at all costs. He insisted that morals and ethics have to play a greater role in formulating the world's economic policymakers.
Well, is this typical for the Pope to talk about the economy like this?
Yes, it is in some circumstances. The Pope was the author of an encyclical letter, which is the highest form of papal teaching. He echoed the message of his predecessor, John Paul II, who said that every economic decision has a moral consequence, and says that people should be worried more about people than about economic theory.
And what is the impact of a speech like this? Who is listening to this, and is it likely to change the dynamic in the European debt crisis?
I don't think it's going to change anything suddenly, but it's a message that will get a lot of publicity because the Pope over the next 4 days is going to be high profile. In Spain itself, there's a huge unemployment problem among young people, up to 30% of young people unemployed. Mm. So this is going to strike a note with many of his young Catholic listeners who are going to say, yes, well, look, the Pope does care about this, and he does think that there is a moral side to economic policy.
The BBC's David Willey joining us from Rome. Thanks, David.
Well, thank you.
Well, economic woes of late have global money flowing to a couple of stable and secure places. Gold, we know about gold, and Switzerland. But the Swiss, Jeremy, are getting tired of this. Hmm. The Swiss franc is now so strong that people in other countries can't afford Swiss goods, which is threatening jobs in Switzerland. So the government there is now battling to devalue its currency. The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker is with us now. Or shall we call him our currency war correspondent? Hi, Andrew.
Hello there.
So the latest skirmish is in Switzerland. Why is the Swiss franc facing so much heat?
Because it's seen by international investors as being a kind of safe haven, somewhere stable to put your money when there are worries about other major areas. And of course, the euro area is one example where the concern about the government debt crisis is spooking investors quite badly. And then for people looking at the US dollar, there's of course the fact that the Federal Reserve has committed itself to keeping interest rates low for a long time. That suggests that the returns on investing in the US economy might not be so good. So they look for somewhere else, and the Swiss franc is the one that's taking the heat. And when people are buying so many Swiss francs, that means its value has been going up relentlessly.
But Andrew, Switzerland isn't the only country trying to devalue its currency, right? I mean, so if we're in the middle of a full-scale currency war, what does that mean?
I wouldn't say we're in the middle of a full-scale war just yet, but there are some certainly fairly heated skirmishes going on. And the other big example of that has been Japan, which intervened in the currency markets very heavily. It basically means there are some countries who are seeing their values of their currencies rising, making their industries less competitive, and they want to limit the extent of that. The reason it's happening is because of events in the United States and Europe. Some people say that in the case of the US, it's a deliberate attempt to push the value of the dollar down to make America more competitive. But whatever the underlying reason, there's no question it's making life uncomfortable for many other countries.
The BBC's Andrew Walker. Andrew, thanks.
My pleasure.
Well, now to a new invention, Steve, that could prove extremely useful.
Yeah.
A company called Millenniata has developed a DVD that can last for 1,000 years, just what we've always needed. So in the year 3000, instead of simply streaming Kung Fu Panda 2 directly into your eyeballs, you can watch it on DVD. Or maybe Geely. I know that's one of your favorites.
That tops my list, man. I love that Ben Affleck.
Now, on the bright side of this news... perhaps Blockbuster does have a future after all.
Those discs are going to last a long time.
Well, as Steve mentioned earlier, the Bureau of Labor Statistics said this morning that consumer prices rose last month at the fastest pace in 4 months. Now, remember, yesterday we found out that the prices companies are paying are going up too. But as Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports, the two are not necessarily related.
The prices companies pay for goods are going up faster than they have in the last 6 months. So you gotta wonder, are companies in a position to pass that increase on to consumers?
No.
Maureen Atkinson is a retail consultant at J.C. Williams Group. She says retailers are in a bit of a bind. They're paying more to stock their shelves, but...
it isn't kind of a situation where, gee, things are pretty good, so let's pile on.
That's because demand is soft. Consumers are nervous. And so, Atkinson says, retailers have to be careful about marking things up.
I don't think... most retailers are going to be able to absorb it 100%, but they certainly are going to have to try and find ways of absorbing some of these costs.
Maybe they accept a smaller profit margin or start selling products made from cheaper raw materials. Economist Jerry Nicholsberg from UCLA Forecast says there are some businesses that have more pricing options than others.
If you're talking about food and fuel, typically you can pass those price increases off in the short term.
We've all got to eat and get around.
In other goods, in more discretionary goods, it's going to be much more difficult for retailers.
Most of us don't need that new navy blue sweater and won't buy if the price is too high. But Nicholsberg thinks overall, higher producer prices are going to end up squeezing both companies and shoppers. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
Well, today NASA scientists will give us a weather report. For outer space, they'll give predictions for a new solar flare season that could wreak havoc on technology. Marketplace's Eve Troe has that.
Every 11 years, the sun's magnetic fields intensify and shoot explosions of electrons into space,
which can impact satellites like GPS, satellite TV, and satellite radio.
Technology writer Christopher Null says the only thing companies can do is turn off their satellites when scientists see a flare.
Just like if you have your laptop and you know you're about to drop it, it's better if it's off than if it's on.
But the flares are unpredictable. We do know we're going to see a lot more of them in the next 5 years or so, says Joe Kunches at the government's Space Weather Prediction Center. And if Earth gets in the path of one of those explosions...
it introduces more energy into the Earth's magnetic field.
Our atmosphere gets electrified.
It's like, oh my God, what are we going to do with this energy?
Whole power grids have fried in past electromagnetic storms. One study says a major solar storm today could cause up to $2 trillion in damage. The only real defense for tech and power companies? To keep a closer eye on the sun. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
And finally, Jeremy, the Transportation Security Administration is trying something new at Boston's Logan International Airport. You've been to that place,
sure,
right?
Absolutely.
I've been there too, flown through there. Screeners are training to engage with passengers more so they can detect suspicious behavior, you know, as in engaging to make small talk, asking questions, and maybe breaking the ice a little bit
and fostering some trust. I recently crossed the border to Canada on vacation. And I did notice that they were sort of making a little small talk.
Is this the Pacific Northwest?
The Pacific Northwest.
I've been through that crossing.
The border guard was like, "So, what are you going to be doing up there in Canada?"
Is that what he said? Really? Did he say, "A"?
What are you listening to on the radio?
What is that about?
Boy. Anyway,
so the conversation at the airport will likely include like maybe a weather report. You know, how's the weather where you're coming from, or maybe something about that new Katy Perry song.
Oh.
That you might be or might not be listening to, or maybe some other questions I'm thinking of, like where are you traveling, like you say, where are you traveling, or why are you traveling there? Or perhaps my favorite, how come that bag has more than 3 ounces of liquid?
Steve, come on. This is the reason why you don't work for the TSA, because you don't have any clue about how to deal with security.
This is true.
You don't
this
ask questions like that. You ask about Katy Perry.
I know. I am a sociopath. I can't help it. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatavis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Have a great Thursday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.